Welcome again to another episode of Escaping Addictions. I have Travis Klein back again, and he's going to talk a little bit more about his experience with the opioid market has changed, the doctor shopping, mental health issues, fentanyl, ODing, and even about him going to rehab and seeing, you know, so many cops in rehab from, you know, dealing with the daily stress of life. So, Travis, how you doing today, man?
Doing good. I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Welcome back. Thanks for coming back on the show. So you said you were going to tell us a little bit about how the opioid market has changed. You said, what, about over a 20-year period of time or so?
Yeah, definitely. So my first experience with opioids came when I was 15. And, you know, I got involved because someone in my high school was prescribed a methadone, a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I experienced that in early age, and from what I saw, here's the thing, is there are a lot of lobbyists and pharmaceutical companies marketing a lot of opioid products, and lobbyists were backing pharmaceutical companies were marketing these dangerous opioids to doctors, and doctors were over-prescribing these opioids for kickbacks. Now, in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, and 90s, the market was just flooded. Like, nowadays, a 30-milligram of OxyContin goes for about $25, $30. Back in the day, it was $6, $7.
What?
Yeah, it was, it might worse. I was doing 30 of them a day.
30 a day?
Yeah, and the thing is a $25, $30 a pill, that's way too expensive of a habit. That's why a lot of people are switching to heroin. They end up, you know, taking these painkillers or getting prescribed painkillers or something like that, and the habit gets too much. You're not feeling anything, it's too expensive, that's when you switch to the heroin. And that's, you know, why a lot of people are dying now, is because you had a whole generation that was hooked on these painkillers. And now they're painkillers, and now due to all the restrictions and everything like that, taking away people's access to these opiates, they're a lot stricter nowadays than they used to be. I lost my train of thought.
No, you were telling us about how you were able to get it so easily back in the days, and then all of a sudden they got all these restrictions going, and...
back in the day, you know, it was as easy as going to a doctor, sitting down, are you in pain? Yes. Okay. And you could walk out the doctor with, you know, 200, 300, 30s, 100, 150, 15s, and, you know, 60, 90 Xanax. You know, for me, I was able to get those very cheaply. So everything would only cost $4 or $5 for all that.
$4 or $5?
$4 or $5 for all that. I saw the market change, you know, a lot. And I've seen the people that grew up, a generation of pillheads, that grew up, you know, hooked on these pills that the pharmaceutical companies have gotten people addicted to. And now those pills are getting taken away, and they have no access to those pills. So they're switching, and like I was saying before, it's getting too expensive, and there's no supply anymore. So people are going where they can, and that's to heroin, and that's what is most likely nowadays, fentanyl.
Yeah, because I know even me, I mean, I wasn't even into pills, and I knew that people say it was just easier to go to a doctor and tell them you were in pain, and they, you'd be able to get a script, or they used to call it or whatever, and, you know, you get all these pills, basically, and you didn't really even have to prove you were in pain or nothing, just go say you were hurting. So you think the thing with the president declaring an opioid crisis, that, or did it start before that? Was it start? Did that start making it hard to get the pills, or was it?
No. The president declaring an opioid crisis, what I've seen, has not really done anything to the trade. The thing that has had the most effect is the database that they've developed, and the fact that you can't go to five or six different doctors a month anymore. The fact they have a tracking system based on how many times you fill a prescription a month.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's real popular in the Southeast. You know, the Northeast, not so much, but, you know, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, it's real popular, Florida being the most. I was able to go to an MRI place that said I had spina bifida occulta, and I don't even know what that is. I just know it's very debilitating, and literally, the whole operation was just dirty.
Yeah.
There, a lot of people made a lot of money, but you see now with the crackdown, see a lot of these doctors going to jail. And
I know, man. So you're saying, like, back in the days, you could go to one doctor and fill a script, and then once that script run out, then you go to another doctor, and they didn't know you had went to another doctor, or they didn't care?
Definitely. Everyone I knew was going to, like, 4, 5, 6 doctors a month.
Wow.
Like, they wouldn't even be out of the first script before they went to the second one.
Yeah. Man, so this got this fentanyl stuff, right? Isn't that like something, tell me a little bit about the fentanyl.
It's very short acting, and it's a very potent opioid. Right now, it's mostly being mass produced in Chinese factories and by the Mexican cartels over in Mexico. It's very lethal. There are analogs of it that can kill you with just a few grains. A few grains of sand can, actually make you overdose. It's very toxic, and then law enforcement and, you know, people like that have to deal with it. They have to wear gloves and masks and things like that because it can literally make you overdose just by breathing it in. It's very addictive. I did it once. I had some lady come visit me, and she had fentanyl patches, so she gave me a couple. So I cut it open, and I ate the gel, and I almost OD'd. But it's unfortunately, a lot of what people think they're getting is heroin nowadays. It isn't heroin anymore. It's fentanyl, and it's killing a lot of people.
I never did heroin myself, so I know what fentanyl is, a pill, right? What's heroin? Is heroin a powder? Is it a pill?
It can be tar or a powder, a brown powder, a white powder.
Oh, okay.
A tar.
Yeah. So it looks something like cocaine or whatever.
Huh?
It looks something like cocaine.
Some of it can. The white heroin can.
Yeah. So now you said you started at a very young age. You say you were 15 years old when you started. You started doing opioids at 15 years old?
I started selling opioids at 15. I started taking opioids when I was 17, 18. That's when I first started going to, doctors and getting prescriptions for benzos and opiates and things like that.
So what do you think? Does basically everybody who tries opioids, well, I know some people take opioids responsibly or whatever. Do you think made it so addictive to you?
When I did it, I felt like I found something that I was looking for.
I know exactly what you mean there, because that's how I felt about alcohol and drugs, that I found something that made me feel like I've been looking for this. A feeling that I've been looking for it. I felt like I was, I don't know, somebody, or it made me whole or something. That's how it made you feel?
Yeah, it was an intense feeling, and it showed you the heaven at first, but it didn't show you the hell that it was. And sooner or later, it just all ends up being all hell, you know?
Yeah. So, you said in the last show that it, I guess, eventually from so much drug use, you had a side. You said, how did you, psychosis, overdose?
Yeah, I almost died.
Man.
I took a bunch of different things at once, and I actually, I almost died, and I got so messed up or intoxicated, but I think that, you know, sometimes I think to this day that I did that, and I'm currently walking around in the afterlife instead of it.
Whoa. Hey, I know what you're talking. I mean, I didn't do that from drugs, but when I was 5 years old, I had open heart surgery, and I went to the other side. I almost died in the operation, and I know what it's like to be on the other side. It looks real. It almost feels like you're in this world. It did to me anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, something I want to say too is like, the government and the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors are completely behind a generation of opiate addicts. You know, they've gotten addicted. One of the biggest lobbyists Rick Scott, governor of Florida. I think he's the governor. I'm not too sure what he is, his title, but one of his major backings was a pharmaceutical company. And Florida has such a bad opiate problem that people were coming from all over the East Coast, as far as Maine, Massachusetts, New York, all coming to Florida to get pills and bringing them all back to their state. So Florida was like ground zero. Everybody was just going to Florida and loading up with scripts and then just flying home or driving home. You know, Ohio, Kentucky, Virginia, everyone was just making their way to Florida to get them. But it's not like that anymore. You know, the crackdown has definitely tightened their grip. It's still possible, but it's a lot less available and it's a lot less easy than it used to be. I don't do it anymore. That's why I speak on it. It's definitely still possible.
Oh, yeah. Did you have a lot of run-in with law enforcement when you were on opiate and drugs and stuff?
You know what? I have no idea how I never got arrested. I had a couple of close calls. You know, one time I was sending a package and I got pulled over as I was leaving the house, and I was like, you know what, if I'm going to prison for 20, 30 years, so I reached in the package and I grabbed about 7 or 8 Roxy's, about 3 or 4 Xanax bars, and ate them. It was a lady cop. I ended up just charming her and, just trying to flirt with her, just do whatever I can, you know, get her away from me, basically. Yeah. I ended up ODing at a gas station, but I called my friend right before I OD'd and I fell out, and I ended up waking up. They said I was out for about 2 hours. I woke up to them splashing water on my face and smacking me on my face. So that was one instance. You know, there's a lot. One time I was like, I don't want to get into all the individuals.
Yeah, you don't have to tell everything. Yeah.
But there's been a lot of times that I don't know how that I did not get arrested, because it's like,
I know what you mean. I mean, I went through the same thing. It was several times they could have arrested me. They caught me with like paraphernalia and stuff like that, and pretty much let me go. So
yeah, I remember one time I was on the Bluff in Atlanta. I don't know if you ever heard the Bluff. The Bluff is like ground zero for heroin in Atlanta. And that's where everyone goes. And I was in the Bluff, and this dude sold us some bunk heroin.
You were down in the Bluff, man?
Yeah, man. We used to go down to the Bluff to get dope.
I heard that was a bad. You ever met Curtis Snow?
Curtis Snow? No, I never met Curtis Snow. I'm a big fan of his documentary, though. But yeah. Yeah, man, the bluff is rough, man. You
I know. That's what I hear anyway. Yeah. So you didn't ever go to jail, but you went to rehab a few times, huh?
Yeah, I went to rehab 4 or 6 times, and this is including 6 or 7 mental hospitals as well.
Yeah.
So I've been in and out of treatments and, you know, mental illness for a long time, you know, since I've been about 18. You know, I've just put so many drugs into my brain that, you know, I seemed to snap out of the psychosis that I was in, but I was pretty far gone, man, mentally. I was pretty far removed, and I was pretty mentally ill. And I'm grateful that I have my sanity back today, but, like, man, I was... was gone mentally. I was gone.
So, I knew you when at the one point, and you've come a long way, man. So you've come a long way mentally. Come out of seemed like a situation that it looked like it was something that was permanent damage, but I mean, today you sharp as ever. So
thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's real. So
you know, like when you're talking about the mental illness, you know, like I think that is the first, that is the most important thing to me. Like my mental health is the most important thing to me nowadays. I spent so many years, you know, enslaved to drugs, or you know, just mentally unsound. I don't know what changed that, but today I feel at peace with everything.
Is there, what's the mental services out there like? Do they have some good services, or is it complicated to get help?
I'll say DC has pretty good mental health services. I'm fortunate enough to have good insurance and I work, and I get very good treatment. I'm doing anything by the book many days. I haven't done anything, you know, really illegal or anything. So I do what I'm supposed to do with the medications that I take. And, you know, seeing the mental health treatment I've received in D.C. has changed my life, I don't know. It takes that. That's the first step. For me, that's when things start to change. And I don't know anyone else who's struggling with mental illness, what they're going through, but don't give up, because it literally took so many combinations of so many medication and so many years of trying to figure out what helps with my mental illness. And I'll finally find something that works. And, you know, I'm thriving today. I'm feeling well. And I just feel blessed because medication keeps me, you know, sane. And out of that mental illness, that PTSD I was in, was really bad.
Yeah. Well, life can be stressful. I mean, you were telling me earlier that when you were in rehab, you would see a lot of cops in there too. So,
So I've been to rehab a lot. And every time I went to rehab, I spent approximately 80 to 90 days in inpatient treatment. And our rehab class was about 50 to 60 people. And a quarter of the rehab every time I went there were police officers and law enforcement. And, it surprised me.
You said they were there for alcohol, though, right?
Yep. All of them were there for alcohol. You know, some of them were shaking so bad, and it was hard to watch. You know, a lot of people underestimate the power that alcohol has, but some couldn't even talk. Their tremors were so bad from their system not having the alcohol, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Alcohol is almost one of the worst drugs there is. When you really, really get the heavy usage, it can mess your brain up, your liver up, and everything, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah,
let's talk about the thing with the cops and rehab. I think the reason that they're in rehab and the reason that they're, you know, struggle with alcohol so much is because alcohol is socially accepted.
Yeah.
That's the major thing. And cops, they deal with a lot of stuff. Like me, I work security. I've become cold to a lot of the stuff that I deal with. You know, and cops, they deal with so much. And, you know, they see such a bad segment of society and they live in that. But the only thing they can think of is turn to what's socially acceptable and what's socially okay for them to do, and that is drink. You know, and a lot of people underestimate, you know, and don't think alcohol is a drug, but it is a drug, a very bad drug. You can die from the withdrawals from alcohol.
Oh, I know. Yeah, yeah. When I went to rehab the last time, when I was, and I had just been drinking about 2 years, and, you know, drinking heavy and blacking out and stuff like that. And when I went to rehab, they said my blood pressure was up to over 200, and they had to give me, you know, Valiums to slowly bring me down, because you can just die quitting cold turkey.
Yeah, we used to drink quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both doing pretty well. You've been sober for a while. I'm drinking 11 months. You know, with the help of my doctor, and, you know, I'm going to any programs or doing anything like that, but I feel good, you know. I don't feel a need to drink. In a good place, you know.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to do this show, because it's like so many people out there that's caught up in addictions and, you know, of all types and sorts. And at times it seemed like there's no way out. And, but, you know, we have a testimony that, you know, there is a way out, that no matter, pretty much no matter what the problem is, you know, we can overcome it if we get the right help.
Definitely. You know, I think, personally, you know, I think America needs to get their story straight, because they want to say it's a disease, but then, you know, they try to prosecute the disease. You know, it's like, okay, we're sorry, this is a disease, it's a mental health issue, but we're going to treat it as a criminal issue, you know, when it comes to drugs and alcohol and things like that. Which I think is sad. You know, you have a lot of people who go to jail and things like that for drug or alcohol charges. You know, like, jail's rough. You know, jail's rough. So you basically come out of there a criminal. And, you know, you go in there for a non-violent charge. One of the most violent places you ever go.
Then you have a criminal record and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's terrible. I think, you know, a lot more needs to be offered in the form of treatment and mental health and, you know, outlets available for people to get the help they need, rather than locking them in the cage and turning them into a, you know, a savage, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So I think we about covered everything that we were talking about earlier, what we wanted to cover. You have anything else you want to say or mention? Or
I just want to say, like, I don't do any of that anymore, and I'll speak on it because I'm pretty far removed from it. You know, it was my past, and, you know, I learned a lot from it, and I'm very pleased to be in the home. Shit, it made me into the person that I am. Yeah, I'm pretty far removed from it nowadays. You know, I don't feel that bondage of addiction and, you know, mental slavery anymore. I feel free, you know, and I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah, I was just at a meeting earlier, and they were talking about freedom from addictions. And it's a good feeling, especially when you felt the being a prisoner to it, being a slave to an addiction, where you want to stop and you can't stop, and you don't know how to stop, and you keep getting into trouble, or other things happen, and you lose everything. It's vicious insanity. All right, Travis, man, I appreciate you coming on again, and you always welcome to come on anytime.
Definitely. I enjoy, you know, talking about things and speaking on things. You know, if anyone, has any comments or anything, you know, let me know.
Definitely. Any comments, feel free to leave them. All right, Travis.
All right, Wiley, I really appreciate you having me on, man. It was great. I think we touched on some, you know, awesome things. I'm going to have to do it again.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do it again, man. All right.